stand up straight at the foot of your love. I lift my shirt up.
Hello, welcome to the newest episode of the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Jordan Rauch, and today we're joined by Film Stage writer Connor Don. And we're going to review Clash of the Titans today. Now, this is the big blockbuster that came out last week. It did pretty well at the box office. Definitely, yeah. But before that, let's talk about some news stories. So first, let's talk about Doug Liman. Today, it was reported he's going to direct the Three Musketeers reimagining, reboot, whatever.
Reimagine.
Someone needs to come up with a name for all of those things. So what do you guys feel about Doug Liman?
I am a big fan of Doug Liman. I guess jumper aside, I've enjoyed every movie that he's made, from Swingers to Go to The Bourne Identity to Mr. and Mrs. Smith to, am I forgetting anything?
Those are the big ones.
I love him as a director. His meticulous reputation, I think, is, deserved, it would appear, just based on the stories and stuff, and I think it shows in his films. I mean, even a film like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is a popcorn flick, is just a really well-made, calculated popcorn flick. So
definitely,
Swingers.
Oh yeah, Swingers. I think Swingers is like one of my favorite movies. But even that aside, something like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I think Doug Liman knows how to make a movie that just can have fun with itself, especially in the past couple decades. Since like the 1990s. The mid-1990s, I feel like action movies have really stopped doing that. So I think something like Mr. and Mrs. Smith was a really, really nice, fresh movie to see, because at some point, action movies just started taking themselves way too seriously. And maybe The Bourne Identity, being as good as it was, maybe it had a hand in that,
yeah,
in action movies taking themselves way too seriously.
Uh-huh.
But it's nice to see that there are filmmakers out there who can still do, fun action and do
entertainment.
And do it well.
No, I agree with you guys about Doug Liman. I mean, I hate a jumper, like I think everyone.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't know whose fault that is. I mean, obviously, Doug Liman is ultimately to blame because he is the man in the chair. But, Hayden Christensen. I will say, I've never thought of Doug Liman as an actor's director.
Yeah.
I never watch a Doug Liman movie and I think, wow, he really got a great performance out of Brad Pitt, or he really got a great performance out of Matt Damon, or something like that, because I don't think his movies really ever depend too much on acting.
Because all those characters are very fun performances, but it's like, if you look at Timothy Olyphant, that it's a lot of Timothy Olyphant,
his movies, he's not making films, in the bedroom, it's like, even bigger versions of that, Spielberg, for example. Yeah. Liman's not Spielberg because, Spielberg can give you Munich or something where it's like, clearly he had to get something out of Eric Bana that, Doug Liman, someone of his, kind of stature really couldn't. But I think, Doug Liman is the best version of a Stephen Sommers.
With his next movie, we'll see if it, because it's,
you said, right?
Yeah, Fair Game stars Sean Penn and Naomi Watson. It's kind of the CIA.
It was based on the true story of
CIA. And it's rumored to be at Cannes. But they're not going to announce the lineup soon, but it's supposed to be done.
Apparently, Cannes is full of,
Wall Street.
just movies, Wall Street 2.
But this Three Musketeers is written by Peter Strawn, who did The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Okay, so, which was a disappointment.
Yeah, and then and they said it's probably going to be in 3D, so surprise.
Okay.
But it's what's interesting, it's going head-to-head.
Who should play D'Artagnan, though? Is the question. What's it going head-to-head?
Paul W.S. Anderson is currently in pre-production on his Musketeers. It's going to be another Deep Impact Armageddon.
Three Musketeers Horizon.
I mean, what else could you call Three Musketeers? One going to be called Musketeers and one... I don't even know. Brotherhood.
Three Musketeers and then the other Three Musketeers.
The Brotherhood of the Musketeer. Can they find Monica Bellucci to be in that one?
Paul W.S. Anderson started pre-production in September, and they're just getting this one going, the Doug Liman's version.
I feel like Liman's got a little bit more clout.
Because
even Jumper did really well. It did well enough that I don't know if you remember, a week after it opened pretty well, he announced, the sequel.
Jumper 2.
We were all like, really, Doug Liman?
Yeah.
Can't you just make a sequel to any of your other movies?
Yeah, but it's getting produced by the same guy that did Sherlock Holmes, so. Lionel Wigram, another guy that I think there's a big production team.
Sure.
But yeah, so we will keep you updated on that.
Sounds good. I'm excited.
Should be good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So next up is Lone Scherfig. Her next project. First, she was announced this project called One Day that she was going to do, but I guess there's another one in the works as well. It's called Mob Girl, and Jessica Biel is attached to Star, and it's based on the true life story of Arlene Brickman, a mafia insider turned informant, whose evidence helped put away Anthony Scarpetti of the New York crime family.
Can I just say that Jessica Biel being involved makes me exponentially less interested?
Yeah, I was actually just about to say that I feel like that storyline in the hands of a much more capable actress would be...
Let's get Carey Mulligan. For those who don't know, she did Lone Scherfig is behind
Can we just cast
an education.
Carey Mulligan on every movie?
Isn't it in every project? Today, we actually reported...
Well, because people know that she's the best person in the world.
Right, yeah. Like Mob Girl, Money Never Sleeps. Right.
An education for a mob girl who sleeps with money. That never sleeps.
I mean, Jessica Biel has 18 this year. And I don't think Nailed is ever going to come out. David O. Russell's.
I know, apparently that just never
is. She's good in that, but who knows? I mean, it was never finished.
Supposedly. She does deliver, though, in the A-Team Chiller, that one line very well. What is that? They specialize in the... Something yeah, and so ridiculous, whatever. But it's a good line, kind of, and I thought that, you know.
I feel like if it was a better line, we could remember it. But,
true.
Speaking of that trailer,
is horrible in Valentine's Day.
Did you guys like that trailer, the new A-Team trailer that came out this week?
It's better than the first.
Yeah,
I agree.
And then they saw that stupid thing at the end with the tank.
But yeah. At this point, I don't know.
At this point, as far as that movie goes, I would have no idea what to expect from Joe Carnahan, because, I mean, he gave us Narc, which is awesome, and Smoke and Aces, which is not strong.
The strangest thing about Joe Carnahan is his first movie, which I caught on IFC a couple years back, Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane, which was kind of his, like, you know, one of many Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Doggian kind of ripoffs. It was his, and I don't even know, he's a very cheap film, I don't know how much he shot it for, but... It was not really that good or really that enjoyable, and I don't know, someone must have seen it and really liked it, but then it's weird, though, because then Narc really is one of my favorite crime films over the last 10 years. And then Smoke and Aces, which is essentially, like, $15 million more budget, Blood, Guts, Bullets, and Octane kind of a thing, and it's just like, I don't know.
I mean,
someone's gotta, like, pull the reins on him.
The two awesome parts in Smoke and Aces were pretty awesome.
He's a capable writer because I read The Gray, which is his screenplay, which is essentially Jaws with wolves in Alaska. It's kind of like The Edge and Jaws and, like, you know, that kind of man versus wild thing. And Bradley Cooper's attached to that. They're trying to get that made. Like, why? I mean, make that movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, make that movie after. I mean,
I hope the A-Team does
well just so that he can make that movie because that's a great screenplay. I'd love to see Bradley Cooper. Take on that role.
Alright, back to Mob Girl. Ready? Listen to this. This is crazy. Over a 30-year career, she had 8 abortions and endured beatings, humiliations, and brutal rape.
Abortions?
Because, like, she slept with all these moms.
I thought that after 2 abortions, like, you just couldn't have... Seriously, I thought, like, you just couldn't have kids or something. Like, I mean, 8.
Jessica Biel, man. I mean, that's kind of a crazy
role like
for her.
That sounds like a monster.
I know.
Yeah. Movie.
And I mean, if anyone could do it, Lone Scherfig.
I mean, who knows? I mean, it's the kind of... I will say that the premise is, while she makes me less interested in it, it is an interesting enough premise that it would...
Well, it makes me less interested in the film, but it makes me more interested in her.
Exactly. Like, right. It definitely would make me want
to... Well, I am sure at some point Jessica Biel had to, like, you know, stop making stealth. No, I mean, next. Like, it has to wear on you, even if you're a movie star that, like... All your films get just disregarded by people who actually enjoy films.
And all the movies we've seen like this are kind of from the male's point of view. I don't think I've ever seen it really.
Well, that's why it's nice. I mean, it's like the year that Catherine Bigelow wins the Oscar, we get a new Catherine Bigelow, too.
That's true.
You know, and that's nice.
All right, well, we'll keep you updated on that project. Yes, all right, let's move on. Now, most anticipated movie of the summer.
Inception.
Yes. Yes or no?
Inception.
And Christopher Nolan's Inception.
I'd say probably.
They WonderCon with this.
Wait. But Furry Vengeance.
Oh, Furry Vengeance. I don't count that as summer. Revenge of Kitty Galore. I don't know if that. I mean, that falls under summer. And Marmaduke. There's just so many. And Step Up 3D. There's so many like solid.
Step
titles.
Up Through the Streets. Yeah. The three.
And that movie streets. Lottery. What's it called? Lottery Ticket. With it looks so bad and there's no press for it.
Yeah.
Little Bow Wow with Bow Wow. Or it's called Bow Wow now, I think. No.
Yeah,
oh, Grown-Ups. Grown-Ups.
Yeah, Grown-Ups too.
Grown-Ups look solid.
No, but there's some moments of Grown-Ups. All right, so...
Grown-Ups could actually be, I mean...
Good-ish.
Adam Sandler, David Spade, Chris Rock, Kevin James. And yeah. One other guy, Rob Schneider. He's whatever. But it could be funny. Definitely. All right. Whatever. All right. Inception.
Yes. He screened. Christopher Nolan was at WonderCon this past weekend, which is a big comic book slash film kind of like mini Comic Con. And
where is WonderCon?
I think it's in San Francisco.
Okay,
but it could somewhere in California. Somewhere definitely.
It is in California. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
And he screened footage of the film and like a new extended trailer, which we'll probably see in a couple months. Maybe attached to The Losers would be nice. I was trying to think of what Warner Brothers movie.
Oh, because of Warner Brothers.
Yeah. But well, anyways.
The Losers comes out in like a couple weeks, doesn't
yeah,
it?
So, yeah, 2 weeks.
That'd be freaking awesome.
And then Nightmare on Elm Street is Warner Brothers too after that. But then Jonah Hex, which is that movie? I think a Jonah Hex trailer will need to be attached to Losers. Like, that's like
that the last.
I don't know.
Yeah, no,
it comes out early June, yeah. But there's been nothing for it.
Yeah. Could a movie like that get dumped? That would just be like really sad. I was like kind of excited when I heard about that movie. Yeah. Josh Brolin with a leading role and shit. Yeah. It's like kind of cool.
Yeah. But anyway, so LA Times did posted an interview like almost directly after this footage. They interviewed Christopher Nolan back on when they were on set in August, last August. So and a ton of new information came out. Inception, the budget $160 million, which
is that official?
It's official, yeah. And it kind of
he could make that back.
Yeah. And he kind of talked about how he wrote the script like 7 or 8 years ago, but he came up with the idea even before then when he was 16. And he kind of started the movie like when he initially conceived it was like strictly like a heist movie. And then in this interview, he talked about how that was kind of all like flash and style in heist movies, and there's not a lot of heart. So he went back in the rewrites. He like gave a huge like emotional spine, as we said, to Leo's character. And he talked a little bit about Leo's character too, how his wife.
Maya Cotillard.
I don't know if that's his wife, because he said his wife died in the movie, and she's, like, dead. Like, in the beginning, you find
maybe
out.
Maybe it would be flashbacks, then.
Yeah, she died, and it's kind of reminded me of Shutter Island, like,
I was just he's, like, say, a wounded, so, like... There's something about Leo lately that he just can't escape the dead wives.
Yeah, and,
well, you know what they say, some places never let you go.
Clearly.
True.
Shutter Island taught me this.
Some wives never let you go.
And, no, but they described the film as Mission Impossible, a brainy Mission Impossible by way of The Matrix.
I like it.
So J.J. Abrams' Mission Impossible.
But with dreams.
Yeah.
But with a lot of dreams.
And he also mentioned that that the film would give prime screen time to Ellen Page and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which we haven't really seen from the trailers.
Prime screen time.
It said like they're a major part in the movie.
So. What about Tom fucking Hardy?
I know. I hope.
And there's a lot of interesting. Is Michael Caine in the movie?
Yeah, Michael Caine's in the movie.
He's in the movie,
yeah,
right?
Because before he said he wasn't.
Does he play Cutter?
He plays
the Cutter.
He plays a wise old man.
He wants to do a man who described dreaming to him. He said it was like going home.
All right. No, and he talked more about the technical aspects, which is some of the most interesting stuff. I thought, like, they built, we reported a couple weeks ago when I was confirmed that they built a huge rotating hallway.
For that scene.
Yeah. And he said, like, and he said it's unlike anything they've seen before.
Can we just pause the podcast and watch the trailer right now? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you guys at home, just pause and just watch the trailer.
Definitely.
And they said it's very, because that whole hallway scene is only Joseph Gordon-Levitt is fighting someone in there. Like, it's right. Not Leo. Yeah. And they said
he's not fighting Leo.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I hoped it was for, like, a split second.
Well, yeah, I mean it's Ellen Page and Joseph Gordon-Levitt are his junior partners.
Right.
And yeah, so that's, I mean, maybe they turn. I mean, it wouldn't be unlike Chris Nolan.
Definitely not.
And they also build
their twins.
They build a massive. That's a good twist. Maybe they're clone.
Maybe they're clones.
Is that Prestige style?
Prestige too.
No.
All right, Hugh Jackman.
They also build a massive tilting nightclub. It's like,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I just can't wait to see. Like,
now, how do they with the like? Did he say anything about how, you know, when the buildings are folding? Like,
yeah. They talked about how, like,
is that post or?
Well, they said like with Dark Knight, like there almost everything was done. Filmed likewise, it was done either on miniature sets or how they actually filmed the truck and stuff.
Yeah, on location.
But they said with this film, it would be impossible. They needed a few scenes with visual effects. So they said like the skyline folding was definitely. Visual effects.
Any explanation yet as to why things like that are happening in the movie? Or?
Well, they revealed the plot to be he goes into mines of like tycoons and like business like upper businessman and stuff, and like steals their dreams and like morphs them and stuff to get things that he wants.
It's really interesting. See the movie, was it Dreamscape? Is that it with Dennis Quaid? When it's like about he can like because it's a really corny 80s movie, but it's like I think that's what the name of the movie, because there's Vision Quest,
right?
But that's not what I'm thinking.
Not that
it's like Dream something, and it's like he Dennis Quaid can like go inside the minds of like these. I don't know. It's
anybody who's listening who knows the name of the movie, please feel free to
email us
and let us know, because now we're permanently.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on IMDb and find out. 2 seconds.
Do it. No. They speaking of like the CG stuff, he said like a lot of the Hollywood versions out now of Hollywood movies has this look of like morphing liquid, like kind of like if you look 2012, it doesn't feel like it's pretty well done, but it's not like, and they said,
well, I mean, but it looks fake. Yeah,
and they said with this one, it looks like a massive mechanical failure. And he said like architecture, when Christopher Nolan was growing up, he had a huge like interest in architecture, and it plays a huge like influence in the film.
Right,
cool. As you can see from, and they said he actually kind of. It had a knock on Avatar and all these movies about like people in another human's body or another body, like surrogates, gamer and stuff. And he said it's not like that. He said it's more like The Matrix and Dark City, and even said Memento and stuff. Like these, it's based on the principles that the world around you might not be real, rather than like this fantasy world that they go to. So,
okay.
Any
reference to Dark City is a good reference in my book.
Yeah, and another interesting note. Almost wrapping this up, they said they used. They filmed at the same place where they filmed Batman sets, like for Arkham and the Narrows and stuff. And they said all those sets are still up, waiting to be used. Which will, and he said it will almost certainly be Nolan's next project, directing project.
Batman 3.
Batman 3.
Nice.
Here's the Darkest Night.
Yeah.
Too dark. Too furious.
Here's hoping in my wildest dreams that he'll cast Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the Joker.
I know.
Yeah, I don't hope that.
No. I feel like they're not going to do a thing with the Joker.
It would be nice if the Joker just remained in Arkham for the third movie. I think, but. It would be cool to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I guess try.
Try.
Why don't they just get Ron Williams to do it? Wasn't he supposed to do it originally? He was, right? He was in the running of it.
So were we talking about something else in the car? Remember that?
Well, Ryan Phillippe was in the running of Two-Face.
Yeah.
Thank God. Thank God for auditions, right?
Yeah. And so the last thing Nolan said, he said he wants us to be in the maze in the movie. He said, think of a film noir, and if you picture the story as a maze, you don't want to be hanging above the maze watching the characters make the wrong choices, because it's frustrating. You actually want to be in the maze with them, making the turns at their side, and that keeps it more exciting. I quite like to be in that maze. That was his final quote.
I'd like to be in that maze.
So it sounds like it's going to be a mind. No, it's going to be awesome.
A mind fuck?
Yeah.
I don't know why we're censoring ourselves on it.
Well, yeah, we're not explicit on iTunes. So. No, we are. We are.
We are explicit on iTunes.
Cunt.
Man, what's going to be better?
Earn it.
What's going to be better? Sorcerer's Apprentice comes out that weekend, too.
Or Inception. Which one's going to be a better movie?
I did
like the second Sorcerer's Apprentice.
I did, too.
It looks fun.
I don't know. I still stand by the fact that I would significantly be anticipating that movie more if it wasn't Nicolas Cage.
Come on, get off the Nicolas Cage train, bro.
Because it just, I don't know, you could have a more capable, more fun to watch actor.
What?
I'll say this about Nicolas Cage. I think there are few people that are actually more capable than Nicolas Cage. Like, I think Nicolas Cage is one of the most capable, I do. What? Dude,
you
why?
Can't say something with. I want to. I'm actually eager to hear this.
No. And you know, I defend Nicolas Cage. He makes a lot of poor films, like Next and like these movies like that, like Season of the Witch didn't look promising. I don't think it'll ever come out, whatever, so that's good. You know, these films that are not good, National Treasure, whatever. But do people not go see him? Like, in Knowing, he sells that character. I thought he was really good in Knowing. There's a couple moments where he slips a little bit.
And look at The Wicker Man. If that wasn't Nicolas, that would just be a bad movie if it wasn't Nicolas Cage. If Nicolas Cage in it, it's awesomely bad.
I mean, we can laugh about it, but truthfully, I mean, my man took it over the edge to the point where, I mean, like, that movie's so bad that it's iconic.
Yeah.
After only 3 years.
And
also, Leaving Las Vegas, who could have played that role better? No one. That's the answer to that question.
He did, and to be fair, that was like, it's like there's this. It's like Nicolas Cage is the Bible, and there's an Old Testament and a New Testament.
Matchstick Man came out in 2002, by the way. Okay, so
which
that was
Sam Rockwell was easily the best part.
But Nicolas Cage
movie.
Was no. so he carried. He was the lead of that film.
And
he was the lead of that film. Knowing came out
Lord
2 years ago.
Lord of War.
2005. One of his best performances.
Blow with Guns.
One of his best performances. A lot better than Blow. I hate this bullshit about Blow being this, like, godsend of a movie. Yes, Ted Demme died, and it was an okay movie, and Johnny Depp is now a great actor.
Oh, the adaptation?
But that does not mean it's a masterpiece. Yeah. Lord of War is a lot better. Andrew Niccol is a lot better of a writer than Ted Demme, all right? I'm sure, I hope the best for his family, okay? I don't say anything, I don't mean anything bad to Ted Demme, but Lord of War, Nicolas Cage is better than Johnny Depp in Lord of War, and Johnny Depp was in Blow, and Nicolas Cage, yes, sometimes he slumps, but in Bad Lieutenant, which isn't that great of a movie,
he holds that movie together.
Thank you,
I will say
Connor.
That. I will say
and
that.
I rest my case.
And we'll see in 2 weeks, Kick-Ass. He's supposed to be
that is, and I've said about that movie, though, that that's the first movie in a long time that I've actually looked forward to seeing him movie.
As Bad Lieutenant, I was so excited about. Wind Talkers, that was right.
Well, that was bad. That was a bad one.
That was really bad.
That was a misstep.
Best part of that movie was watching Christian Slater get his head chopped
face off.
Spoilers,
Con Air, that double.
All your dreams come true because Christian Slater gets his head chopped.
And they show it too. Yeah. It's crazy.
But dude, back to back. Ready? The Rock. We're leaving Las Vegas. The Rock, Con Air, then Face Off. It was like glory day.
Great American cage action trilogy. I've said it over and over again. The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off. Arguably the three greatest action movies of the 90s. Next to Speed.
And Die Hard with a Vengeance.
And Die Hard with a Vengeance.
So maybe they're pretty far down that
list. No, dude. No, definitely. Though, like, those three films are masterpieces in their own right. Fucking Nicolas Cage.
All right, well, we will keep you updated on how Nicolas Cage does in Kick-Ass.
And in his career.
To bring it back, we'll see how he does in Sorcerer's Apprentice and if he can top.
Jay Baruchel is going to have a nice little run.
All right.
Good for Jay Baruchel.
Well, do you guys want to start clashing?
Let's release the Kraken.
Let's release it. All right.
Let's do it.
All right. Clash of the Titans. This is a 1981 remake, or a remake of a 1981 movie. Louis Leterrier, who previously did Unleashed or Danny the Dog, alternate title. I've actually never seen it.
It's really good. It's definitely his best movie.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, no.
And then Transported 2, which was fun, but kind of
ridiculous.
Yeah. And then The Incredible Hulk, which I enjoyed.
I liked The Incredible Hulk.
I've never had the need to watch it again. Dan hates it.
I could watch that movie again and be like, oh, it's The Incredible Hulk, but yeah, I mean, I'm not.
Edward Norton, man. Rough movie in general.
Like Tim Roth, though?
I like for the 30 minutes he's in it. Yeah, that's awesome. And the unfortunately, there's another hour and 15 minutes of that movie.
Now we have Clash of the Titans.
Which is better than The Incredible Hulk.
I agree.
Can we... Are you not going to agree, Jordan?
I think... We'll get into more. I think there's... It's hard.
I think
Incredible Hulk could be better made than Clash of Titans. Like, there's more spectacle in Clash of Titans, which I enjoyed, but as a whole, like, all the elements coming together, I think.
True. And at least I'll say this, Clash of the Titans, and maybe it didn't need to, it didn't try. Like, as far as, like, anything remotely, like, deeper or anything like that.
But I will say, it
tried a little bit, at least, to, like, give a little bit more dimensions to it, to its characters than Clash of Titans did.
Incredible Hulk tried to deepen Bruce Banner like
more than Sam Worthington's character. They did nothing with
Hulk. But Louis Leterrier literally took everything that Ang Lee tried to do and reverted on purpose to make it like the comic book.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Ang Lee's Hulk was not good. Like, really not good.
Yeah, but I mean, Ang Lee had ambition. I mean, yeah, it was failed ambition, but, like, at least he tried. Like, that was my biggest problem with the Leterrier version, was that it seemed like they were just settling. Like, well, you know, the Hulk, he just gets angry, and, like, yeah, we'll have, like, 15 minutes at the beginning where it's about how he kind of turns, and he's like, you know, and maybe we'll get Edward Norton, because Edward Norton is, like, an established actor, and people just assume that it's a good performance, because Edward Norton gives good performances. It's not really just a horrible performance because Edward Norton didn't know what to do because he's never been an action star before. And the screenplay is horrible because Zach Penn has never been a good writer ever since The Last Action Hero, which was a good screenplay. Like, I don't know. That movie felt so lazy to me. Like, Clash, I thought they tried to establish, like, a theme. You know, the idea of... Yeah, I mean, granted, obviously, Worthington's character is not much more deeper than the character of Perseus himself in mythology. Idea of... a man who doesn't want to be a god, who is a god, and has to struggle with that, and he doesn't want to use the powers, but he does. I mean, the inherent Jesus mythology in there is easy, yes, but well placed, I thought, in general.
And I will say this, I mean, if we're still comparing the movies, Clash of the Titans does have the benefit of, like you said, it has a theme, and it does have the benefit of having sort of larger characters than the Incredible Hulk had to, like, even though they're, you know, not very, they're very shallow characters, you know, they can at least sort of consistently kind of hammer that theme home. You had, like, Mads Mikkelsen, you know, and Sam
as Drago. Yeah, great performance.
Yeah.
And he might have been the best part of the movie.
Probably, yeah.
But you at least had, and I mean, I still think it's kind of funny that we're even talking about themes in Clash of the Titans, because it is very much just, I mean, popcorn fluff, but it at least had the benefit of having that many characters being able to sort of repeat the themes for you, so you at least, it at least got them across. So,
right, I mean, it was at once redundant, obviously. Like, I rolled my eyes more than a couple times, because, like, they literally echo the whole thing about, you know, like, Perseus being a man, a god, demigod. Like people said demigod back then, too. I kept thinking, like, demigod is very much, like, modern English language, you know, thing. Right. But anyway, what'd you think, Jordan? What'd you think about the movie?
That morning, actually, to get ready, I watched the 1981 version, mm-hmm. which I hadn't, I mean, there was no nostalgia factor. I mean, I just watched it that morning just to check it out, and it's very much like a modern day update and nothing else to that version.
Exactly.
The plot is literally almost the exact same. I mean, they added a character at the low or.
Io, sorry. Jim Arterton.
Yeah.
Beautiful movie.
Yeah. And, but the one thing I didn't like is there's not so much in this new one. It's very much they jump from place to place in these big set pieces. And the first, there was kind of this more of a sense of, adventure and wonder, like as they were kind of, I mean, it's not, granted the special effects are better in this movie.
I think people do hold nostalgia for the stop motion.
Yeah. And I could totally see that. Effects, right? If I saw that as a kid, you know, I would probably think this movie wasn't as good.
But, like, for example, one of the things, I think this is, I haven't seen the entire 1981 film. I've seen probably, if I composited all the things, I've probably seen, like, an hour of it, right? So, I watched some of it with you that morning, and I would say, from what I've seen of the original, one of the things that makes this, and you're right, it's very much, like, a straight remake, but I think one of the things that makes the remake slightly superior is the casting is a lot better.
Yeah.
Laurence Olivier's Zeus was kind of just a mistake. I don't really think he did a great job. He was a very mournful Zeus, like, not really. He was like Hamleting it up, like Laurence Olivier, it seemed like.
As opposed
to. Like, when he says, I don't know, like, when he says release the Kraken,
yeah.
In the original, he's like, release the Kraken. Which, I mean, Zeus doesn't say that. No, you know what I mean? Zeus is an angry dude. He rapes people. Like in mythology,
which
and in the movie,
Zeus gets angry in the movie, and he rapes people, like in the movie it has a flashback where he essentially does that to a woman. It's like kind of nice. It's like I hate to say that, but like that is the Zeus of mythology. Yeah. He's an angry guy, and then he literally repents because he does, I mean, in his own way, care about his creations a lot, like, you know, the Catholic God and a lot of the Christian God in a lot of ways. So I thought Liam Neeson had a much better handle of it than Laurence Olivier.
And
Worthington looks a lot more like a hero than fucking Harry L.A. Law Hamlin.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
and I will say that
Mads Mikkelsen was in it.
He was probably one of the better parts about it. And the more I've thought about it, the more I think that Ralph Fiennes is probably also one of the better parts about that movie.
Couldn't they have gotten James Woods to play Hades like he did in Hercules?
It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine, and we realized there are actually a lot of similarities to Disney's Hercules that were kind of like, wait, did they not remake Clash of the Titans and instead just remade Disney's Hercules? Like, I don't know if you guys.
By the way, underrated film.
I love Disney's
People
Hercules.
Don't give them movie.
I love Disney's Hercules, but. Do you remember the Sisters of Fate in Disney's Hercules?
Yeah.
And they're the three old women
yes.
pass around the eyeball.
Yes, that's true.
And the witches in Clash of the Titans did the exact same thing. And
that
I was
is
like,
actually really interesting. That is really
okay,
interesting.
Okay, Lewis, you tell me you didn't watch Walt Disney's Hercules.
Well, who wrote it? Who wrote Clash? It was
Travis Beecham,
right.
Yeah. And he did, one of them did Amflux. Who was it? Yeah, the Phil Hay. He wrote Amp.
Step up, step a step up,
and not step up.
Yeah,
but a step,
a step.
And he formed the story of the tuxedo, the Jackie Chan.
So yeah. He cracked that story?
He cracked the story.
He
cracked the tuxedo.
He came up with the concept and he handed it off.
So we just make it about a tuxedo?
So wait, he read the medallion script and then said, okay, let's substitute the medallion with a tuxedo and then we're good.
Jackie Chan. Like, what were those movies? The medallion, the tuxedo? Those movies were horrible. The Spinning Store. Oh, wait, that came out this year.
Well, we got the Karate Kid. What?
No. He's in that. I keep forgetting he's in that.
So, the basic story of this movie, as we probably said, is Perseus. He is
Zeus's son.
Yeah. And it's weird. In the original movie, they start out directly. The first shot of the movie is them casting out Zeus. Because, like Dan said, Zeus comes down, rapes his mother. They have a baby. Then they get cast away, literally, on their coffin or whatever they get. And the first shot of that movie was that scene. It was like this really epic like storm and they get cast away. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that better because you're not sure what's going on and it kind of stays with Perseus the whole time and kind of see him grow up. In this movie, like, he came on shore or whatever and his dad, I forget, and they kind of do like one or two scenes of them like fishing.
Yeah, not bad for like the 2 seconds.
Well, I gotta say, I've seen this movie twice because when I went home for Easter, my brother, my 12-year-old brother, really wanted to see it, and so it was nice. I took him to see it
in 2D, right?
And I saw it in 2D, which was so refreshing because it's so much better in 2D. Just as like a visual thing, it's so much better. So that was nice, and I think I appreciate the movie a lot more because of it actually. But I actually kind of enjoy those opening scenes. Now, like, granted, I had coffee in me the second time I saw it. I essentially fell asleep for, like, half of it the first time we saw it. Because it was boring, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it wasn't. I don't think it was poorly written so much as it was poorly handled by Louis Leterrier.
It might have been the pacing.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like,
I feel like, I almost feel like, also, like, you were talking about 3D.
But Postlewaite, I thought was greatly casted, yeah, though, as the Joseph of Perseus, you know, the stepfather. And, you know, I don't know. But, I will say this quickly, though. So, obviously, Perseus, this is what happens, his family, his stepfamily dies because people knock down the statue of Zeus and they declare war against the gods and da-da-da-da-da.
Hades comes
and literally a wave, like, whatever. Or, you know, actually Hades himself, like,
yeah,
burns, the shoots, burn, yeah, shoots, I mean, the, whatever. And the scene where he's going to save his family, he, like, swims with the ship to, yeah, like, break it open. Like, oddly, it feels like he doesn't try that hard.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
I mean. Like, it was strange, though, because, like, wow, like, what a miscalculation. Because, like, and if you're listening to this and you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. Like, he's...
There's, like, an opening, and he's like, all right.
It's a Casino Royale moment.
He, like,
you know,
he like, gets it, yeah, but there's no motivation why he wouldn't. Right. You know, like, he gets it open a little bit to see the father, and then, like, tries a little bit harder, and then
it swims up. Well, I was wondering that when we saw it.
Strange. Strange decision.
I mean, unlike Dan, I've only seen it once, but in that scene... I know that his father does, like, motion for him to go.
To go, yeah.
So there is that. So I think that maybe, I don't know if that was a writing thing or a directorial thing, and they just said, okay, that's
But like
enough.
I said, but obviously, like, I don't think that's the writer's fault, because it's not like the writer's going to write. He tries, but not that hard.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And so, like, that, whose fault is that, you know, that you're not going to hold the shot for a little bit longer? Because obviously in a film like that, it doesn't matter how long he's under the water, okay? This isn't a movie where you're like, oh, he could totally not hold his breath for that long. He's a fucking demigod. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter. There could be an explanation. He could hold his breath for fucking 15 minutes if he wanted to.
Well, that's the thing. Even in, if we want to talk about Percy Jackson, The Lightning Thief, which has a lot of similar
stuff. You clearly did.
The opening shot of that movie is Percy Jackson holding his breath for over, like, 3 minutes.
Good, actually. That's actually...
No, eight or nine. It's like 10 minutes.
Is his name, like, is he essentially like Perseus? Because
his name's
Percy.
His name's Percy Jackson.
But no, but I mean, like, he is Percy, like, yeah, essentially.
Yeah, Percy is, yeah.
That's actually really interesting that, yeah, both those movies came out with,
like, dude, it's, like, blows my mind. Like, why? Like,
I get to see this.
Greek mythology making a comeback.
And let me say that I had a lot more fun Percy Jackson.
That is interesting.
A lot, like, a lot more fun.
No, wait, then Clash of the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Well, like, I know, he kills Uma Thurman's Medusa with, yep, his iPod Touch or something.
Yeah, well, that's his shield.
I thought that was crazy.
Which is ridiculous. But see, there's so,
I don't know.
People hate that movie for things like that.
That's awesome. iPod Touch is, like, so modern.
No, it's so,
no, you don't think so.
But it does date. I mean, it's
as soon as Ray Harryhausen stop motion.
No, and that, yeah, I mean.
And in shitty 3D. Trust me. Yeah.
Well, do you want to go down by the 3D for a second?
This motherfucking
I was thinking about the 3D, and I think that they like tried really hard, because in the first 30 minutes, it's really apparent, and then it just kind of dies away, you know, like the 3D. Yeah. And like Dan talked about the shot, the most distracting shot, I think, in the movie is the shot where Hades comes down, blows up the ship, and it's like coming at you, but like it's so like, it's like they just had a layer behind and a layer in front, and there was nothing like with Avatar, it was so cool because there's a sense of depth and like scope, like everything had a
immersive, right?
Yeah, immersive. And and we're talking like the opening scenes with the ship and the father, and then there's like objects
like
on this ship,
like a rope will come past, yeah. And it's like what,
and it's just so, it's like all blurry, all the objects are just like this, like and then but like as we said, like you towards the end of the movie, you could just take your glasses off and just kind of watch it, it's probably more enjoyable.
It like disappears,
yeah.
You know, like it's weird, and you know, maybe for the better, but
yeah, and even
because like when the Kraken comes out, it's like not even. I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really even notice it that much.
No.
Like even when, because you know, in the trailer when he like roars in front, I thought like, oh, they're probably gonna sell that awesome. Shit for all it's worth. Like just,
I mean, it was a freaking poster for the movie. They had,
and
that
like
was
it's
the
not
shot.
Even in 3D, really. Yeah. It's like, is this in 3D? I guess it is.
But actually, Louis Leterrier, he responded today about it. And he said he was very disappointed in the 3D post conversion.
Did
he
really say that?
Yeah,
good for him.
Which is really funny. This is
let's watch Unleashed tonight.
He, Warner Brothers actually told him. I mean, this is a little spoiler, but Warner Brothers told, because one of our writers was interviewing him, and Warner Brothers said, "Don't bring up the 3D in your interview." Like it was on Friday when the movie came out.
You know, this makes me also because me and Jordan, we talk up Warner Brothers a lot on this podcast, and. I just want to say that I'm disappointed in Warner Brothers. I'm disappointed in Warner and his brothers.
Yeah, and it's a little. I mean, some people listen, I guess, because the box office receipts. It was a little less than half saw it in 2D, and then a little more than half saw it in 3D. And with Avatar, it was more like 75%, 25%. So, but this was his quote. He goes,
"Good for people."
He goes, "It's funny that it's one of those things I was saying to them. Don't make it so much like a Viewmaster. So puff it up." So puffed up. Listen, it was not my intention to do it in 3D. It was not my decision to convert it in 3D. There you go. That was it.
Good for him.
And you can tell with some of those, there is beautiful shots in this movie. Like the production design, I think, is one of the strongest aspects.
Yeah.
And it kind of, with 3D, it kind of dims it and makes it, like, it pulls the focus out to the characters and not the background. And
I will say this, like, and this is going to sound kind of stupid, but apparently, based on Box Office Mojo, it only cost $125 million, which I know it sounds stupid, but, like, most movies like that these days cost like $200 million. I don't know, at the end of the day it seems like they spent their money well. Yeah. I mean the movie does look like
they economized.
Like I remember when I watched it I thought, oh, this probably costs $150-175 million, you know, with the 3D post conversion. But assuming that $125 on Box Office Mojo includes everything.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like it was...
Well done, I don't know. That's kind of like...
I mean, like, through what, Terminator, last Sam... Well, not before Avatar. It wasn't Terminator $200 million or something?
Terminator
like
Salvation was $200 million. I remember I thought, like, wow, that's a lot of money. Yeah. It doesn't seem like they got their money's worth.
Yeah. Even Wolverine, right?
And, like, Wolverine was $150 and that movie looked like shit.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so it was, like, one of those things where I was like, oh, well, maybe... Like, when I was watching it in theaters, like, I did see it in theaters. I did. I watched the work print, and then I saw it in theaters. And I remember when I was watching it, I thought, like... Well, maybe this movie like only costs $100 million because like that would explain why it feels like 1999.
Yeah.
And then it went, and then you know, sure enough, it's like $150 million. And I was like, Fox, baby.
Yeah.
What did you do?
But then they made Avatar, so it gets confusing.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's very confusing.
It gets confusing.
It's all a mess. No, but no, Clash of the Titans. I thought they did like for that time period. That feels like it's in that time period. Like that's one of the because some movie like even the Ray Harryhausen, it's kind of. The set design and production design isn't, except in some sequences which we can talk about, like in terms of which the action, like if you want Medusa, I thought it was handled a lot better in the original.
Yeah,
because they
you have to rewatch it.
I liked the setup for Medusa in the remake.
But the tension's kind of gone because with the original, it's this dark kind of like a basement. I mean, but you know, I mean, in that area, there's pillars.
No,
I don't know. It reminds me of Lost.
Like,
but yeah,
mom, turn on the light.
Yeah,
we're trying to kill Medusa.
So he's, you know, around these pillars and trying to look with his mirror, and like she can come out of anywhere. With this one, it's kind of like they follow the tail a lot,
right,
like, and he's like running through. That was one cool part of it where he's running. He was trying to run away from her, and then like it was kind of
no. I mean, it was well in chasing, but like yeah, you're right though. I agree. Medusa, there should have been more of an element of surprise.
And why was it CG? The Medusa was like, if you looked at her face, it was like a CG
face.
Come on,
I don't really know. Yeah.
It was definitely disappointing, like, as far, because I remember, like, the beginning of that scene really, really liking it, especially, like, the way her laugh sounded, and, like,
right.
You know, you'd see, like, the tail kind of go up over, like, you know, the little ridge there, and then, like, disappear into the back, and they're all sitting there waiting, and you had, you know, your moments of, like, nice comic relief with, I can't think of the soldier.
Well, he's an Irish actor, he's good. He's,
I can't think of his name, but that one comic relief-y soldier, you know.
Well, he's essentially John Rhys Davies from Indiana Jones.
Right.
What's his name?
Sala.
So he's essentially Sala for Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
He's always cracking jokes.
Right.
And when he, spoiler alert, dies, it's very sad.
Oh, because you're kind of like, oh, well.
I wanted more jokes.
Yeah.
But
I mean, he even had, like, that whole beginning of that scene was awesome. And then Medusa comes out and you're like,
well, here's my question. Right. Here's my question. Why did her face look like Connie Nielsen? Because I honestly thought that I was like,
there's no answer.
Connie Nielsen, like, did she like threw a composite, like, you know, model for this? Like, you know, who'd be great as Medusa? You know, that chick from Gladiator
and Big Sick. Probably would be a good Medusa,
yeah, well,
actually.
But not a CGI face of Medusa. Yeah. I guess they couldn't get in with Thurman because she was already doing Percy Jackson.
I don't know. But no, the scene, I did like the scorpion scene as it went on, kind of like the middle,
yeah, the way it
the
started,
of it,
it had a slow start, which was strange. It was like they came out, like, I remember seeing those scorpions in the trailer and being like, oh, that scene's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then when it started, just being like,
well,
oh.
The blood, that was kind of cool, how they, like, start, like,
oh,
came into the
blood,
sand.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
you know, the, well, because in the film, the king, whose wife is the wife, is the mother of Perseus, you know, who Zeus, had sex with. He is Jason Fleming.
Jason Fleming,
who's a good actor, good British actor. He is literally, like, optioned by Hades to do his bad deeds for you know, because Hades wants to take over the Olympus, and, you know, because his brother Zeus tricked him into, you know, ruling the underworld way back when. Da, 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 da. Yeah, and also, just actually to talk about Ralph Fiennes quickly, good performance. Me and you were talking, Connor, about how he might, like, just end up looking like Voldemort just because Voldemort's
and
king,
and that's
king
what
of
was,
darkness, and,
that,
he, and he totally not.
And it was very refreshing, and I mean, it sort of reminded you that Ralph Fiennes is a good actor, you know, because it's like, in your head, if you think about him playing, you know, the Lord of the Underworld, you're like, oh, okay, well, he's going to be Voldemort. And then him playing it like this, really, like, weary and weathered.
He's got this, like,
like he's been breathing in smoke his entire life, kind of thing. Like,
really cool.
Yeah, no,
and
really
also,
nice
the makeup
turn.
Design on him was great, too.
Yeah.
Like, the grays and shit, that was awesome.
And I don't know if it was good as Steve Coogan in Percy Jackson. That was kind of awesome.
You are literally the most, like, you are the strongest defender of Percy Jackson in the world.
I mean, you made the movie, didn't you?
I
love Mrs. Doubtfire.
But who does? I'm sure a lot of people are wondering if you saw the movie what Danny Houston was doing in the movie.
Yeah, you can't even.
If you blink, you will literally
you
miss
can't
him
even turn to
life.
Your friends and
actually,
say, hey, that's Danny Houston before he's off screen.
But we have an answer to that. Jack, who interviewed Lewis, he said that there's a lot of actually deleted scenes with him.
Well, damn it.
Well, damn it.
Because Danny Houston's awesome.
It's kind of funny. It's almost like what they did to Warner Brothers again. It's almost like what Warner did to Michelle Monaghan in Constantine. Because, not that that's a wonderfully awesome movie or anything, but she played a demon in the movie, and then they cut her out, and, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this, but...
She has one scene.
At the end of the movie, when Keanu Reeves, like, confronts all the demons and sprays them with the holy water, there's that one chick that goes, holy water? And that's Michelle Monaghan. But she's in, like, a ton of deleted scenes. She had this whole extensive part that just got trimmed down to, like, one thing.
You don't do that to Michelle Monaghan.
Clearly, Warner Brothers does that to everybody, so...
It's a shame.
Yeah, but so do you want to? We talked about all that. I think what was the big action? Yeah. Oh, the one action scene I want to talk about that was actually handled really well was right after the Medusa scene.
Oh, the fight scene with Jason Fleming.
And so, like, it's kind of weird. In the original, they have Zeus sends down a sword only Perseus can use, and a helmet and a shield. But in this one, they only did the
sword,
the sword,
and then the Pegasus.
Yeah, and then the Pegasus, which is black in this one and white. And
yeah, I like that. I like that black. Thing.
Yeah, and
and that Pegasus shot at the end was easily the best shot in the whole movie.
When he flies out the other end of the eclipse.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, they have a fight scene at the end. and Sam Worthington's jumping off shit and like actually looks like he's into it. Unlike
it actually looks like Sam Worthington.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe he was. I don't know.
Yeah.
And like I also I like the way that Jason Fleming kills Io because it's so, like just so like I mean granted. Like, we'll go into spoilers, so turn it off if you have Clash of Titans.
Except Dan already told you that someone died.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. But it's Clash of Titans.
Yeah, that's fine. But, even though Io was brought back at the end by Liam Neeson, which I actually really liked.
You like that? Yeah, I did not like that at all.
Because it was supposed to be funny.
Funny. Yeah.
Because Sam Worthington laughs. He's like, ah, Zeus, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, like, no, I agree. I actually liked it.
Thank you,
Kyle. Cheesy, although it may be, but it's like...
Aware of itself.
Exactly, because I think the movie sort of says to itself and the audience, like, okay, if you handle all the cheese up to this point, then you won't mind
like,
us.
Here's the dessert.
Exactly.
Here's a little Gouda. Go home with it.
Because it's like, and I'm really, really glad that they didn't play anything up with Sam Worthington and, can't think of her name. The princess.
Andromeda.
Well, because in the original, that's
the thing. It's like, why does so she... Stupid. Even though she is so... She's the one in the original. I don't know her name. But she's so beautiful compared to...
I don't think
she's
a... Oh, never mind. No, I'm thinking
but
someone else.
It's just one of those things that Gemma Arterton... Right? That's her...
Yeah.
Okay. She's so beautiful in this movie that, like, when she bites it, you're kind of like, shit! Like, they were supposed to, like, get together! And then they do at the end anyway, literally...
The pace is...
Not regarding...
Fuck it.
That's the thing. It's like, oh, wait, but he has
but there are other lines that are just as cheesy that I enjoy just as much. Like, at the end...
Call in your stool.
I like when Ray finds, at the end, he comes up, right, the Sam Worthington, and Sam Worthington has, like, the sword, and he's like, I'm a god. I'll live forever. And so everyone's like, but not here. And then he like, plays it and the lightning from Zeus comes down, he fucking throws
like, it's so cheesy, but so awesome.
And shout out to Aladdin. I don't know if you noticed, but how like, Hades like gets shot, and then right as the shit's closing, he gets like, Jafar gets like the whole thing. Or maybe not Jafar. No, lamp gets thrown into the
thing.
Classic Aladdin reference. Yeah. Probably unintentional, but I loved it.
Should Sam Worthington be more pissed at Zeus because like, he raped his mom? I feel like that didn't come across too much.
But if he,
like,
if he didn't rape his mom, he
wouldn't be alive. That's true. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Like,
can
he's
he really
like,
do
oh,
that?
Okay,
it's confusing.
He's not.
You know, well, I mean, Hades killed his like actual family.
That's true.
And he doesn't like Zeus.
And yeah, also, one of the... I mean, aside from the awesome action, this is just one thing I want to kind of squeak in here. Aside from the awesome action on screen, one of the things that mildly disappointed me about this movie is the action that doesn't happen that should. Because when Hades comes to Olympus, like in
at the end
of the movie,
there should have been a Zeus Hades fight.
Right. It's almost like Legion. How there should have been. Well, no, it is like Legion. How there should have been that
Gabriel Michael
fight. Because the movie's already so cheesy that it's like just do it, just have it, so we can have something to chew on.
Like when I saw him come up there, I was like, oh yeah, this is gonna be so sweet. Oscar Schindler versus that really fucked up Nazi.
Oh my god! Speaking of, I just watched fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, not awesome. That's probably not the best word, but. Very powerful.
Very powerful.
Dude, it was kick-ass. It was just like, yeah!
spoilers. Dude. Clash of the Titans is no Schindler's List.
Dude, Schindler's List party tonight.
Bring your 6 million friends.
Whoa. And that's less than anyone listens to our podcast.
Connor is... we do not represent the views.
Connor is Jewish. So he's allowed to... No.
Well, that was a great note then. No, so what were you going to say about...
No, but I mean, it's one of those things that you really had an opportunity. I mean, you had Zeus, Hades, Olympus, and all sorts of other things going on at the same time. Like, that you had an opportunity to sneak in a really awesome action
like,
set piece.
It would have been cool, actually, for like a parallel fight scene between Zeus and Hades, and then the Kraken and, you know... Perseus.
Right.
That would have been kind of cool. I don't know. Yeah. Like, that would have been different from the original.
Well, I kind of like the way in this new one, if you look at the ground, it's kind of like this 3D version of the actual Earth, like when they're walking on it.
Yeah, and like in Olympus.
Yeah, and I wish they kind of like, because in the original they have these, which they actually have a shout out to in this, in the
owner. Yeah, the voodoo dolls.
And in the original he actually tore Mads Mikkelsen's character in the original, his like trainer.
Draco.
That's how he kind of dies. Like, he plays with Zeus, like, does something with the voodoo doll. And they don't really use it at all in the air, but they could have, I feel like they could have done something like you could see the battle maybe, like a mini version on the earth. That would like be cool. On top.
What's the thing about these movies? I mean, there's an infinite amount of possibilities, so there's always going to be people that wanting more.
Left
wanting more.
But I feel like something like that, like a fight between Hades and Zeus, like that's an obvious choice that should be made. And clearly for a movie that, as we said before, economized this as well as it seems to.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like they could have spent a couple million more to throw in a few more effects for.
They would have to do is choreograph a scene,
right?
You know, I mean, essentially, I don't know how much more that would have cost.
And I mean, I feel like Rick Bynes and Liam Neeson are still
capable
enough physical actors that they could have done something like
exactly.
that.
Taken and Ray Fynes
and the Reader.
Ray Fynes and the Reader
running around like crazy in the Reader.
He walked through those doors like I've never seen
someone sit with so much intensity in the Reader.
Wow,
like he was so morose.
Yeah. But you know what I'm talking about. Wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah. In the end, though, I mean, we were all kind of, I feel like, kind of left with just this. That was fun, but, you know.
Yeah. An enjoyable ride.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think if I would have told anybody who was going to the movies this weekend. Actually, I did tell people who were going to movies this weekend. They were like, what should I see? And I said, see Clash of the Titans, but don't see it in 3D. You know, and I think, go there with a big bucket of popcorn and a drink and... You're gonna have.
There's.
Time.
I there's feel really... like now that I mean I know you guys have How to Train Your Dragon. There's.
Right. I would have loved to have seen over the weekend.
There's no way I could ever recommend How to Clash of the Titans over that. Like,
yeah.
Plus, that's still an IMAX 3D. Clash of the Titans wasn't IMAX. Like,
no.
And this is still so. I mean, that's because that has a better sense of adventure and a better like. You just feel like wow, that was an awesome movie. Like,
right.
And with this movie, you kind of feel like wow, there's some cool stuff in there, but
At the end of the day.
I feel like if I had seen this movie when I was 10, I would have been like,
I saw my 12-year-old brother and he really enjoyed it.
Right.
He really, really enjoyed it. So, you know, he didn't really enjoy G.I. Joe, and he really enjoyed this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason he didn't enjoy G.I. Joe is because he just thought it was kind of stupid, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. And so whatever, I mean, you know, a 12-year-old's opinion-wise, I think that... Show something, you know.
And he didn't
hate Transformers 2.
He didn't like Indiana Jones, though.
True, he didn't like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. True, but he's stupid. No, I'm just kidding.
I hate my.
I love you, Sam. I love you. All right.
Well,
I say see it, but I agree with Jordan. I guess see How to Train Your Dragon, or like see something like edgy, like Anton McGowan's Chloe. If it's around your theater, just because.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you're not gonna be able to see shit like that all the time. So.
Yeah. And if you see Greenberg, don't get a refund. No,
Greenberg,
just
don't get a refund.
Because they can only give them out so fast. So.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, I would give Clash like a 6.5 out of 10.
Review that I did not publish, I gave it a 6 out of 10.
I'd go probably in like the 6 range, somewhere in the 6 range.
Definitely.
All right. And now Louis Leterrier said that he has a trilogy plan, so we'll see.
For Clash of the Titans, really?
He has 2 more films.
Well, here's hoping we have a Zeus Hades fight somewhere in the future.
Maybe it'll be Clash of the Titans.
Spoilers, one of the probably, and I know it's a remake, so they have to keep the title, but...
Still one of the strangest things about the title is that
there are no Titans in this movie.
And there is not that much clashing either. Really?
Really?
I mean, or Titans.
So really, nothing about the title rings true. The movie
it's kind of like Spike Lee's Summer of Sam. There's nothing about Sam. It just takes place during the summer of the Sam killings.
And that's really about it.
Yeah.
And
Adrian Brody has a mohawk. In that movie.
And Too Fast, Too Furious. It's not Furious.
Or Fast. Well, I guess it's kind of Fast.
I think the only thing true about that movie's title is the 2.
Yeah, it is the second movie.
That's
they use 2 2s in it, so that could confuse you.
Fast and Furious, the fourth one, also doesn't ring true because it's not the first. It's actually the fourth.
Yeah.
That's why it should have been called 4 Fast, 4 Furious.
Now Fast 5, though, that might live up to its title.
Because Fast
it is
5,
the fifth,
because
and it
no
might go fast.
Furious in it.
Yeah.
And there is Fastness, and it's 5.
Yeah,
so,
that's
this could be the greatest movie.
Well, we'll end on that note. So, no, check out... How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay.
Check that out. Please, to God. Check out How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
And then Ren. Clash.
Clash. fans, or see it with your 12-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Catch it. I would say, I could see reasonably spending a matinee price on this movie and feeling comfortable.
Or paying for How to Train Your Dragon and skipping the Clash. That's another alternate.
After seeing How to Train Your Dragon,
right? Exactly. Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
double feature. Right.
Yeah. And guys, go see How the Time Machine, because it's not doing well.
Yeah, and it deserves to do better.
It deserves it.
Yeah. MGM doesn't have any money either.
Yeah. So do it. All right. Well, next week we got Date Night, which no screening, so we might. But
we'll have to spend our good own, our hard money,
hard cash. Okay. Yeah. And that's only wide release, so I think Clash will easily beat it again.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just $65 million it came out. Through, yeah. So. And it was nice to see the last song didn't do amazing.
It did well.
But yeah.
Good for Greg Kinnear.
Yeah, and just riddle me this. Okay, Tyler Perry's "How Did I Get Married" made $21 million. Now, 30. And how do I get? Well, no. Then "How Did I Get Married 2" made $39 million jump from the first song.
Well, dude, listen. The title's "Why Did I Get Married?"
Oh, why?
Not how to get married.
How to train? I'm just so
the Tyler Perry joint. Yeah. So get it right. No, I don't know. Actually, that's actually a really good question. I think the big thing with Tyler Perry movies, because you're always going to get that audience, like that, just the same audience that goes to see all the movies. I think a lot like Adam Sandler films, a big thing is when you release it.
Yeah.
Because like Bedtime Stories, for example, didn't do that great for an Adam Sandler movie. And I think part of the reason is because it came out in December. So you have people going to see like, you know, other shit. Because there's a lot of options. But like I think when you release a Tyler Perry movie, like if you look, all of his movies that have done really well come out like right now. Yeah. Like in these opening ones.
And they every weekend they make their budget back by $10 million this weekend.
Right, well, I mean, that's why Tyler Perry is one of the smartest people, like, you know, in terms of financially, but like...
Really savvy.
I think just like Adam Sandler, when you have that built-in audience, it's really important to release it smartly. So,
definitely. And limited release next week is The Square, which is Australian. I can't thriller.
See it.
We'll probably be able to see the trailer for it. I don't know if it'll come around here, but yeah, definitely check it out. And if you're in Buffalo, starting this week is The Runaways and Mother, both.
Nice.
I've seen Mother. Mother's really great.
Very mixed things about The Runaways.
And The Runaways, yeah. So.
I've really wanted to see Mother for a while, actually.
Really good. Yeah, so we will be back next week with a review of Date Night, probably. Which definitely. Out. And then a week after that, Kick-Ass.
Oh, man.
Wait.
All right,
good.
So good.
All right, well, we'll see you guys next time. Good night.
Have a good night. I never married, but Ohio don't remember me. I still owe money to the money, to the money I owe. I never thought about love when I thought about home. I still owe money to the money, to the money I owe. The floors are falling out from everybody I know. I'm all alone, but yes I am. I'm all alone, but I'm all alone, but God I am. I'm all alone, but